You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Nikita.
Hey, Bob.
How are you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm very excited about Claude Code. We may talk about it in overtime.
Yeah. You're going to decode Claude Code for us, which is good. Also, in fact, you're going to decode the whole world. Let me introduce this first. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is a Non-Zero Podcast. You are Nikita Petrov, valued member of the Non-Zero team, also publisher of the Psychopolitica newsletter. And you are in Spain, and that's why between the two of us, we can get a more global perspective than we would get from me alone. Also, you're from Russia, as some people may have guessed. Mm-hmm. There's that hint of your accent that persists, notwithstanding how cosmopolitan you've been for the last couple of years. It's been wild. Things have been wild in the world, in the country. Seems chaotic, hard to get oriented. Fortunately, though, you have a grand unified theory that's going to make everything clear, a grand unified theory of MAGA that renders Trump coherent. Oh, you can't render Trump himself coherent, but wait, am I overselling this, Nikita? I see you're getting uncomfortable as if you're not going to be able to deliver on this promise.
Well, let's see.
Maybe I should stop. And why don't you tell us what you have in mind here?
Well, so I was yesterday preparing for this conversation, and then you are going to be on a stream with Glenn Lowry later the same day as we're taping this. Mm-hmm. And the topic there is going to be also, you know, the breakdown of the...
And John Mearsheimer, too, may join. He's going to be with Glenn, and we may overlap a little, and I may talk to him a little. But people should check that out on YouTube, because by the time this comes out, that live stream will have happened, but it'll be on YouTube, right? It'll be somewhere.
It's not going to be immediately... the recording is not going to be immediately available on YouTube, but we'll post it in due time. Okay. And I think we'll actually be able to cross-post on YouTube. I was just looking into that functionality.
Okay.
I was preparing for this. And, one of the major themes is this forum in Davos and Trump's threats to take Greenland and then backpedaling somewhat on that. And the overall narrative is the old world order is breaking apart, and what are the contours of the new one? And there's a lot of kind of shrugging and confusion and bafflement about all of that. And I was just sat down to write out what I think. And I don't know if this is obvious and I'm late to understanding the basic contours, or if it's not going to make sense to me, but to you. But to me, it felt like pieces fell into place. And now I see MAGA as a coherent global kind of phenomenon. And the thought that gave rise to this is, it occurred to me that almost like in the communist tenets, the original Marxist and Leninist view was that communism cannot be achieved in a single country. It has to be a global movement. Mm-hmm. And I thought, isn't that right about MAGA as well? If you see MAGA as an attempt to reclaim agency on the part of the nation, the people, there are these like shadowy elites that control everything, the unelected secret services. If you listen enough to Tucker Carlson, you'll find out that secret services don't really have allegiance to any particular country. It's this like global network of people who have their global interests in mind, and these nation states are not really the agentic forces acting in this world. If that's the worldview and you're trying to reclaim agency on the part of the American people with this national leader at the top, then you have to, the way to do that is by breaking up the order that exists now, these world elites and the UN and all of these networks that make a nation state just one of the units within a global network that has to play by certain rules. And so if that's the goal, to make the nation state and the nation the agentic force, that's what the world is should be governed by, individual peoples that exert their influence in whatever areas they can, then it is in your interest that these populist parties in Europe become stronger. It is in your interest for NATO to be less of a system that can force you to do something. You know, Article 5, a country is attacked. Now you're at war with the other person, with the other nation. You want agency to rest with your country, which is synonymous to nation and people. And then if that's the framework to look through at the situation, then both domestically and in foreign policy, it all kind of falls together. Domestically, first you need to define what this nation is. Got to close the border, got to deport all the people who came in the last whatever years. Got to make sure that between the federal and the state authorities, it's clear that the federal has priority, because we want to be one nation, civilization, government, everything with a coherent kind of arrow as to where we're going and how. And you want, so that when you see leaders in the world who have something like that going on, like Putin or Modi or Xi, you respect them. Those are the people who are playing the game that you're trying to play. And when you see these international organizations where you're supposed to adhere to their rules, you want to increase the degree of freedom you have from that. And maybe that's breaking up the organization, maybe coming up with new system like this Board of Peace. But the overall project is simply to make nations.
Definitely have a different explanation for the Board of Peace.
Well, I have a couple,
which is
for
a
those
Trump
too.
Is Trump. But anyway, well, let me say a couple of things. I think first of all, yes, it's kind of natural that you have this irony of, you know, an international like network of nationalists, right?
Yeah.
Like, it sounds ironic, an international movement of people who are kind of against internationalism, who are nationalists, but it makes sense, of course. And it goes back to, at least, I mean, in terms of visible manifestations of it in the Trump era, during the first Trump term, when Bannon got kicked out of the White House, he did this tour of Europe and tried to rally the various nationalists, Le Pen, right, and so on, and say, let's get together and find synergy. And of course, there is synergy. I mean, if you're trying to tear down transnational institutions, you need to do it transnationally. I mean, that's the most effective way, right? These are institutions that transcend any one country. So that makes sense. Where I would differ, I mean, I think all of the pieces of the puzzle you're putting together belong together. Mm-hmm. My arrows of causality would be a little different than yours. So you kind of started with the narrative. There are these shadowy elites.
Mm-hmm.
And then in your scenario, the question becomes, well, what does the narrative dictate? If you buy the narrative, what has to happen? You know, like, for example, ultimately somewhere there in the way you put it was, you know, you got to close your borders and blah, blah, blah. The way I would put it is, that is the narrative of this movement, right? It involves transnational elites for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, it's just their narrative. I mean, yes, there are shadowy transnational elites, but they're definitely overstating it, right? I mean, they're painting a much darker picture. Like, look, I have as dim a view of Jeffrey Epstein as anybody, but I think, you know, some people are over-exaggerating the coherence of his operation. And so that's an example where I think, so I would ask, like, why does the narrative have power? Why is this working for them? And I would say, well, you got to look at the forces. You know, look, it's a populist narrative, okay? It's going to the masses and saying elites are bad.
Yep.
Which, by the way, many of them are. Not you know, none you or I know, but some of them. And okay, so why is that narrative working? Why is the political movement working? Why did Trump get elected? And I would say, well, there are real forces on the ground that drove it, and one of them is immigration. Again, as turned into a narrative to some extent, because I don't think immigration was as responsible for the employment situation in middle America as some people thought, or as populist politicians, tried to convince them was the case. But these are real things, okay? There was unemployment in middle America. Low-wage labor in America that had come from the border, across the border, did have something to do with it. Low-wage labor in China did have something to do with it. Now, what was understated, by the way, for purposes of this narrative, was the role of technology and automation. That didn't fit so much into their narrative. It's about to. I think AI is going to figure into populism in an interesting mm-hmm. way. But it was in their interest to say, no, it's these immigrants coming across the border. It's these nefarious Chinese and the international institutions that mediate all this, like the World Trade Organization that's got us enmeshed in this global economy. It's not working for us and blah, blah, blah. So that's how I would say the narrative developed, is actual forces in the world, globalization and a lot of stuff created grievances that could be harnessed by populist to create this narrative. And that's how I would say it all fits together. Now, the one interesting question is, to what extent are the grievances actually the root causes the same? And in Europe and America, for example, the narrative is the same. And I would say there's some overlap of root causes, but some things that are distinctive. So, for example, in Europe, a big thing is the European. Now, in America, there are some issues with NAFTA, but it's just not nearly as powerful or as important as the EU is. And in particular, and this is where some issues come together, the European Union makes it hard for individual nations to control their borders. As far as, it makes it harder to control their borders in both senses, economically, flow of goods and services, and the flow of people. Now, here's another piece of the puzzle, kind of, is that, you know, one place I agree with Tucker Carlson is when he rails against the stupid wars we launched or fanned the flames of in the Middle East. And those led to a big part of the refugee issue in Europe. In fact, I would say, if we don't invade Iraq, if you go back and redo history, we don't invade Iraq, Trump doesn't become president. Because if you look at the things that flowed from that, two things. I would say Brexit doesn't happen and Trump doesn't become president. Honestly, if we had had a sensible Middle East policy where we're not going in and bombing Libya and invading Iraq, and by the way, fanning the flames of the Syrian civil war by sending in a shitload of weapons that are still floating around. And also some of those weapons came from Libya once we unleashed that, once we deposed the regime, the black market for weapons that had originated in Libya got very vibrant. So anyway, if we hadn't done all that stuff, Trump wouldn't have had like ISIS as a big issue. There wouldn't have been the homegrown terrorism that, not nearly as much that he really capitalized on in that first election. If you look at the timing of the homegrown terrorist attacks that were fueled by grievances that were explicitly about American wars in the Middle East and Afghanistan. So this is the way I see some of the interconnections is like, and I would say, the narrative, you know, so we're almost, it's interesting. We're almost looking, we're almost going at it from different ends, you and me.
I'm not necessarily saying, in fact, I'm not saying that the causality is like, first you have the narrative and then everything flows from it. I kind of feel that the narrative is something that emerges out of this complex, you know, you have different vectors, and then if they form a direction all coming together, there's cultural stuff, there's immigration, there's economics, there's all kinds of stuff happening, but they all push in the same direction, and then you sort of see what this movement is, what is the direction, and then you have the narrative once you like formulate it. So culturally, I think a lot of on the level of the voter, a lot of this is probably not very articulated. Cultural stuff, for example, you know, it's more like, I don't recognize this country anymore. We used to be a place I understand. It was, this is my people, we are Americans, or even simpler in place like Germany or someplace, you know, there's like a people with a history, and now it's all of these people moving in, and I don't understand what the identity of my nation is, or it's changing, and I wanted to stop or to go get back to the good old days. And you don't have to have any idea about the world order and the shadowy elites and all of that to just feel frustration with this. And that frustration translates into support for a candidate who says, let's go back to be in a simple, straightforward country with a straightforward identity. But, you know, that some people are driven to the polls by this, and others by economics, and others by something else. And then what it leads to, and it's this Davos forum is what made me kind of put all of this together. Why is this, what is he doing? What is Trump doing? And the US is doing, in the world, what are these new allegiances and partnerships and the breakup of old ones? And when I described it to myself this way, like the project is to make peoples the acting forces in the world.
Right.
You try to do this for the United States. Your project is enhanced, is supported by successes of similar movements all over the world. And it's not even that it has to be explicitly the same, you know, your kind of allies ideologically. I thought about it with Carney. So he delivered this powerful speech that's on everybody's mouth these days, where he says that the rule-based order has long been a fiction, or partly a fiction. It's been useful, but not really real. The rules were applied differently to different agents and so forth. And he says, let's stop pretending it's a thing. Let's face the reality. And we, middle nations, middle powers like Canada, need to have a strategy in to survive and to prosper in a world where there is not this international order. So, and he's, you know,
yeah,
Trump,
let
and
me
him
just
are,
say, I think I read him on that part maybe a little differently than you. I think, yeah, kind of, but he's also saying we middle powers can get together and help create some semblance of a rules-based order, whether just among ourselves or in concert with others or whatever, or maybe with a future U.S. president, with the U.S., but whatever. But we are the ones, you know, it's not like he's saying Trump's right. It's every man for himself. And the middle powers are going to, you know, are going to get together. And you know, in the spirit of that, I think he's claiming, you know, he didn't say, you know, he didn't say in the rules-based order. He said in the hypocrisy about the rules-based order. Now, by the way, he may have a test soon. If Trump bombs Iran, I'm waiting to see if Carney says, I denounce this, or perhaps more interestingly, if Israel leads the way, like last time. Last time, Israel bombed Iran, plain violation of international law. Carney said, quote, Israel has a right to defend itself, raising the question of what it was defending itself from, since Iran hadn't done anything. Okay. We'll see if he changes his tune this time. I'm not betting on it. So I'm just personally holding off on the praise for Carney. Let's wait and see if this was anything other than total bullshit.
He seemed to be saying there's going to be different kinds of cooperation between different countries. Like we, Canada, will have trade with these ones, and you know, on security, we're going to work with different set of people.
No, he'll do that. He'll do. Look, let me say on that front, you're just already seeing in response to Trump this phenomenon. You know, they used to say about the internet, it was designed to root around damage. Like if there's a problem anywhere in the internet, the traffic just naturally roots around it. Well, the global economic system roots around damage. Trump is damage, and you're already seeing Canada doing more deals with China, the EU, with India, blah, blah, blah. That's almost just natural. And that's part of what I think Carney's speech foreshadows is like, look, America's just too erratic. And at least under Trump, we got to get together and do what we have traditionally done, what America used to be part of, which was have a robust international economic system that has, you know, fairly coherent rules of the road and so on. So to the extent that Carney's talking about that, I do imagine he'll deliver. But if he's talking about, you know, we finally need to really respect the rules in the sense of the international law governing transborder aggression, I will be surprised if he drops all hypocrisy in the future.
Well, that's kind of my feeling. The reason I brought him up is I was about to say you don't have to be an ally to still fit in the overall kind of reshaping of the world in the same direction. So if Canada says we're going to look out for our interests, it's just we're going to be better at finding non-zero-sum relationships with other nations, and we will have rules with like limited scope, not there's the world order, and here's the rules, the laws of the international engagement. But here are the deals that we've made with this set of countries on trade, and here are the deals we made in a different part of the world or in something else. That overall framing, you know, there are different nations in the world, powers of different size, and the big ones can do whatever they want because they have the power, and the middle ones need to stick together to have more of a say in their own fate. And the small ones, you know, good luck to them unless they get a good deal with these other ones that could protect them. That overall framing is something that Trump would be happy with. And then it becomes that the speech by Carney is not really fighting against the change of how things are done. It's actually...
No, I think he would say, yeah, I have to accept the reality that the U.S. is so powerful that what it's going to do, it's going to do. And we have to adapt to that. You touched on one thing a little earlier that is just also part of this whole equation to if you want a grand unified theory of MAGA, which is just a very traditional source of conservative energy a source of one kind of conservative energy that has actually worked against another kind, and that is starting to happen again within the Trump administration. There's a tension between two kinds of conservatism. The first kind is so-called Burkean conservatism after Edward Burke, who that is just... to call it resistance to change is to put it a little too unkindly, but it's a response to the pace of change, just the sheer pace at which life is being unsettled and traditional norms are being undermined and so on. You know, William F. Buckley in the first issue of National Review famously said, what was the line? It was something about we stand, astride of history and yell stop. Like, I forget the exact words, but the idea was, shit is just, we want to hang on to traditional values. This has traditionally been a big part of, well, pretty big part of MAGA. I mean, well, I won't get into the many senses in which even that's not true, but there's a truth to it. And the other kind of conservatism is a kind of this economic libertarianism, which is, you know, no taxes, no regulation, blah, 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 which is, although favored by some Burkean conservatism, is ultimately at odds with Burkean conservatism because it fuels the speed of change. I mean, untrammeled capitalism just charges ahead and changes shit, and you can't do anything about it because they're anti-regulation and they're not that big on the welfare state, traditionally at least. So anyway, Trump has embraced these Silicon Valley libertarians, and this is all going to come to a head with AI, okay? Right now, J.D. Vance, who supposedly by virtue of his bio has Burkean roots, nonetheless wound up in Silicon Valley and is saying no such thing as AI that moves too fast. He's modulated that a little now, but there's video of him that may not help him in the next election saying, you know, there's just, I've never seen a technology that you know, merited less regulation, basically. So anyway, I just want to say that's a force too, is just like, man, this is not the world I grew up in. And look, right. I feel that because the world these people grew up in is not the world I grew up in, both because I'm older and because it was a particularly kind of conservative heritage I had, and, you know, culturally. And so there's that. I would just say it would to throw into this, and this is just all going to get super weird with AI. And, yeah. And that actually leads us to what we're going to talk about in overtime. And maybe before long, we should go into overtime. But I think one thing about Claude Code that hasn't hit home yet, and we'll talk about, is the way it heralds a new phase in the acceleration of AI. And people don't. You know, I mean, as you know, I've got a book coming out on AI in a few months. I'm trying to, of course, it's called The God Test. It's on Amazon. Not yet. Not too soon to order. But anyway, and I'm naturally thinking about, you know, when this stuff is going to become, when what's happening is going to become clearer to more people in terms of the sheer pace of change and how radical revolution, technological revolutions is going to be. And I do think that Claude Code right now, AI people understand the power, the significance, and other people don't. And yeah, we can talk about that in overtime, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I just took with another member of the Nazir team, Tom Frank, we took first in a series of little workshops about Claude Code, and it kind of made me, I haven't really put everything together in my mind. Over time, I'll kind of think out loud, but it reshaped the whole way I think about this.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about it. Let me throw one more thing in the discussion about the, you know, what MAGA is, and its global reach. It made me think, again, this overall framework made me think that Putin's project is 100% in line with this view of things. Like Russia, like he's big on talking about Russian sovereignty. That's what we want. In the 90s, they felt like Russia didn't have that sovereignty. And actually, talk about international institutions, it's kind of wild to think now. There used to be a time not too long ago when Navalny would sue the Russian government in the European Court on Human Rights, win, and get paid. Like the Russian government paid substantial sums of money to him because that was the law, not international European, but Russia was a part of the system of law. And if you win in the court, that's, you have to pay. And so the Russian government paid. And I imagine for Putin, that felt like, what the hell is this? Like, I'm the leader of the country. This guy, like, the country should be sovereign. No European court can order me to pay to a guy that I'm going to put in jail or kill eventually if he doesn't shut the fuck up. You know?
Yeah, I as an advocate of global governance, I think there's been some overreach that's a long story, but you're right about that. I think there's a kind of a strong strain of just Burkean conservatism in Russia as well, kind of. And I want to in overtime test that theory on you before we move on to Claude Code, because I had an experience in Gorky Park in the early 90s that kind of crystallizes it. Well, while we were visiting Russia, it was the Russian Republic still at that point, and it had, I don't know, maybe a few months left in as the Republic. I don't know what, maybe a year or two, but so overtime is available to paid subscribers of the Non-Zero newsletter, and it's easy to become one. I encourage it. And anything else to say before we move into overtime, Nikita?
No, I think this is good. We'll talk about Gorky Park and Claude Code. To become a member, to get access to overtime, click on a link in the video description or in the show notes if you're listening to this at the podcast.
Well said. You're professional. You're the marketing guru I've been looking for, Nikita. Okay, so yeah. So thanks everybody who's listened or watched so far. And now we are going to head into overtime.